You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Roger Berkowitz knows fish, and he knows the fish business. After all, he spent nearly 30 years as the CEO of Legal Seafoods. And that made us curious about his new project, selling fish online and frozen with nitrogen, especially in a post-pandemic world of climate change, inflation, and the ebb and flow of family businesses. So we asked him. Roger Berkowitz, founder of Roger's Fish Co., dropped by Studio 2 late last month for a wide-ranging conversation, starting with how his late father, George Berkowitz, felt about Roger's big business moves.
I told him what I was doing. You know, and it's kind of funny how it happens, because my father worked with my grandfather for a number of years in the grocery store legal cash market, and then he opened up a fish market next to it.
So your grandfather's store opened 1904, father's market in 1950.
Right. And my grandfather used to help my father out, and my father would always tell him, he goes, you know what, Dad, at some point I really want to transition into the restaurant business. And he'd keep telling my grandfather that, and my grandfather passed away a few months before he actually launched the first restaurant.
1968?
Yeah, in 1968. And so I had an opportunity for several months to tell him what I was getting ready to do and sort of watch his excitement as we got closer to it. And it was sort of like almost the same thing that happened with my father's passing before we actually did it.
So did he, I mean, he was 97.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, the internet age came up while he was, probably started when he was in his 60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did
mm-hmm.
he fully understand an online marketplace? Did he like it? Did he support the change?
Yeah, I had started we used to call it mail order, and before that it was the catalog business. I actually had done that back in the 70s. So it was always somewhat of a part of what we did. But, you know, people would sort of use it for gift giving, that kind of thing. It really hadn't taken off mainstream until a year or two before the pandemic hit. And then, of course, with the pandemic, it really started. The whole online notion started to take off, particularly with food.
So last question about your dad there. You know, we've talked before, you've talked in the media lots of different places about the challenges of the pandemic and your decision to sell Legal Seafoods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was that conversation like with him?
What I really loved and appreciated about my father is he got it. He understood how businesses change over time. And, you know, sometimes people get stuck or rooted and they don't like change. He was the exact opposite in that. So he was fully supportive.
Why?
In terms,
what in his DNA made him one of those people that even in their older years was flexible, elastic, when so many people aren't?
That's a good question. He did a lot of reading, particularly news kinds of things. He didn't particularly read novels, but he liked nonfiction. And so he was always reading magazines. He was always reading that type of thing. And so he fully appreciated that life cycle, if you will, of businesses and the natural evolution of things.
And is that you now? Because obviously you have said you basically wanted to fail retirement. You didn't really want to retire.
Yeah,
you know, you sell Legal Seafood, now in your 70s, you are, you know, you've got this new business.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you elastic, and did you get that from him?
I've always liked evolution. I've always liked new things. I've always liked, okay, what is and what could be. And so I think that was always part of the DNA at a certain point. And, you know, it's interesting what's happened with restaurants now, because, you know, the model of restaurants in particular, particularly full service restaurants, was under siege the way the labor rates kept going up, the way the cold chain kept getting more expensive, the labor intensiveness of things.
And I don't know what the word cold chain means.
Okay, so how product gets handled from the point of origin, and in this case, fish, you have to keep it cold anyway.
So, got it.
But how that changed. And so when the pandemic hit, as an example, it changed the way fish was coming in. It used to be you could always count on five or six boats coming in every week, say into Boston. And then what happened when the pandemic hit, a lot of restaurants, most restaurants were closed for a minimum of 6 months, and then they started to open at 50% capacity. And so their usage wasn't the same. And so a lot of the fishermen said, hey, if our best customer are in restaurants and they're no longer consuming fish the way they did, a lot of boats actually got out of the business and boats stopped coming in with the same regularity that they used to. And so as I was kind of grappling with that, it sort of made sense, okay, if fish isn't coming in the same way it used to, and the other issue was global warming, and the water temperatures were rising, and a lot of the local species of fish were actually migrating into colder waters.
You talked to me about that when we talked in 2019.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's actually been accelerated. You know, I mean, you can still find the occasional cod, but a lot of that has moved up into Newfoundland, into Canada, over to Iceland as an example.
So let's stay there for a minute. We haven't really fully talked about this business model of your new mm-hmm. company, but just for now, for mm-hmm. listeners, you can go online and you can order Flash Fresh Frozen.
Uh-huh.
Hard to say. Flash Fresh Frozen.
I call it Nitro Fresh.
There you go. Nitro okay. Fresh Foods, some pre-prepared, some frozen
right.
raw,
right.
And have them shipped.
Mm-hmm.
When we talked in 2019, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that you talked to me about was this need for responding to global climate change. Mm-hmm. And you said you thought agribusiness was going to be mm-hmm. a big piece of mm-hmm. it, that fish farming was going to become necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Have you incorporated fish farming fundamentally into your new business?
Yes, yes, I have. Fish farming has in some ways gotten a bad reputation. And like anything else, there are good fish farmers and the bad fish farmers. And you have to be careful who you're dealing with. I mean, you know, there's some really spectacular product coming out, very consistent, with really great flavor profiles that have minimal impact in the oceans in a negative sense. And then there are others that have substantial impact. So you have to sort of navigate the water, so to speak, making sure that you're getting the most natural product. So given that there is global warming, I've actually just rotated off. I was on a board with NOAA called MAFAC, Marine Fisheries Advisory Committee. And while I was on the board there, they actually, NOAA took a position where they're now starting to set up areas for fish farming along the coast of the entire United States. So they're embracing the notion that fish farming is the wave of the future.
National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yes. And they're in charge of the fisheries, National Marine Fisheries.
Okay.
It's sort of under their purview.
Is there an opportunity here to help local fishermen, help the fishing industry? Mm-hmm. Most of, if not all, of your distribution basically is run out of Salem, New Hampshire. So you've stayed in the region with this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
we're back in Massachusetts.
Are you back in Massachusetts?
Yeah, we're back in Massachusetts.
Thank you for that. Okay, where
right.
where are you based in Massachusetts?
So we actually have a fulfillment site that we're working out of in Lynn, and I hope to be doing production back on the Boston Pier.
When?
In the next couple of months.
Okay, that's soon.
Yes.
All right, so interesting. And what about people who fish in New England and the fishing industry?
Interesting. One of the interesting things that came out of the pandemic, and I have to give a credit to Senator Markey. He had a number of town hall meetings with the fishing industry when the pandemic hit because no one really understood which direction things were going in. And one of the things that we were able to do after a series of those meetings is we said, hey, this is the first time fishermen, processors, and distributors from Boston, New Bedford, Gloucester and Cape Cod have actually spoken to one another because it's a very independent business. So what we did is we formed a not-for-profit called the Massachusetts Seafood Collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've got everyone working together. So as a group, we're working on things like food security, and we're getting everyone on the same page. So if people have an issue with some of the quotas or moratoriums or have an issue with gear coming up, we have a forum and a format to speak with one voice. And that didn't happen before. So sometimes necessity is the mother of invention, if you will. And so people are now sort of working together in ways that complement one another, which is good. The other thing that's happening that's on the horizon is, I don't know if you saw it in the Boston Globe recently, but there was an article about the Silicon Valley of the fish industry is actually taking place in Reykjavik, Iceland. And what had happened, there was a guy named Thor Larsson. What he did is he put together an incubator, if you will, because seafood was the number one and number two source of income for the economy in Iceland. But he realized that when you sort of harvested fish, say cod, you were only using 50% of the fish. The bones, the skin, the organs were being thrown away. And he thought, maybe there's a better way. And so he put together this group of people who were innovators in this sort of think tank, and they developed uses for the skin, uses for the bones, uses. And now today, the value of that fish, they use 100% of the fish, not 50%, the value of what was being thrown away is now worth more than the flesh of the fish. I was with Thor over in Iceland taking a look at that a number of years ago when he was starting it. And so we're trying to get him now to come to Massachusetts and perhaps set something up in Boston where you have so many biotechs here. One of the companies that came out of Iceland, as an example, was a company that developed fish skinned for wounds in the battlefield because the healing properties of the skin was better than any medical
development. Well, and of course, we have the world's largest biotech hub here in the greater Boston
exactly,
area.
Exactly.
So we've, pun intended, we sort of swam in the open ocean a little bit with the uh-huh. conversation since we departed the part about family at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But now I'm gonna bring it back there because one of the things that we've been paying attention to mm-hmm. here on the show is the arc of restaurants and businesses mm-hmm. in greater Boston that have been born of families, mm-hmm. stayed in families, mm-hmm. and are now looking like they're going to reach the end of the generational line. Mm-hmm. The next generation doesn't want that business. Mm-hmm. And we're intrigued by whether mm-hmm. how much of a pattern that is. Mm-hmm. So now you've got a new business, right? Mm-hmm. And I wonder, is this Roger Berkowitz's or mm-hmm. is this the beginning of a Berkowitz legacy? How are you thinking about Rogers Fish Co. that way?
You know, it's interesting. I think in the past, you always thought of it as in terms of a legacy business. I think today, that can't be the motivating force. I think the motivating force is, let's establish something that's good. Let's make some headway. Let's be innovative. And if family is drawn to that, then they can participate. But if they're not drawn to it and they don't have a need or an urge or a love for it, then I think it's inappropriate for them to feel that they have to. I mean, I think in generations past, and there were it's all sort of nuanced, but there was an expectation that, that's a business. Yeah, this has been in the business, the family for generations, something where we want to go. So, you know, as an example, my oldest son is involved in the restaurant business, you know, not with us, but in purchasing. My middle son has always been interested in IT.
Well, you thought you were going to be a journalist.
Yeah, that's true.
And you were just going to work in the family business for, a couple years?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So if something is compelling and it draws you, you should do it, whatever that is. You know, so what the advice I would give to generational businesses, it's that a generational business is not an entitlement and it's not something that people should automatically assume, well, I should be doing this. You should be drawn to it. There should be this inherent love and desire to do it. Now, it might mean in our case, we always, you know, in families, you sometimes, if your family is in law, you talk about law around the table. The same thing with medicine. Well, we talked about food, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're in fish as an example.
So that's intriguing to me because, and I'm gonna project on you now.
Go ahead.
If that's the case, or let's say since that's the case, mm-hmm. one would think for you to start this business in 2023, mm-hmm. now, at this stage in your life, mm-hmm. one of a few things is going on. Either you still had something to prove, you had something you just desperately needed to try, you're building something you want to sell, or goodness sakes, I can't imagine. So why just start something now if the generational thing wasn't at the heart of it?
All of the above, the things you just articulated. Part of it was when you're operating a reasonably sized business, you know, you have some pet projects
that
you're
doing.
That
being legal seafood.
Yes, yeah. And I had dabbled in retail. We had some of our chowders, you know, nationally. We had the e-commerce business, but I wasn't able to focus 100% of the time on it. The pandemic hits. I sell the business. I'm thinking, you know what? These are two areas that I believe the marketplace is moving towards that I always lamented not having spent more time on. If not now, when? So that is part of it. And I didn't want to leave the business during a pandemic. I wanted to sort of come up with a solution that addressed some of the needs that the pandemic sort of...
You didn't want that to be your exit.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
All right, so last question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nearly half a century ago, Julia Child said to you that she had eaten, basically, I'm going to simplify, some frozen fish.
Yep.
And it was good. And you did the equivalent of raising one eyebrow in skepticism.
Right, right.
And of course, now you are flash freezing with nitrogen.
That's right.
Fish and sending it to people. If she saw you today.
Yes.
What would she say about your business?
Hopefully she'd pat me on the head. For listening, finally listening, I was a little slow because, you know, she was, you know, trying to tell me she had fish that was perfectly as good as fresh. And I said, come on, Julie, there's no way in hell it's going to be as good. No, no, it was. All right. So I filed that conversation. I was a little bit dismissive, I have to say, because I was fresh fish, fresh fish. My daughter did a semester abroad about 10 years ago in Tasmania. And so I went to visit her, and they had kind of a robust seafood industry there. So I wanted to see what was going on. And I went to an oyster farm. And at the oyster farm, they had one species of oysters. They were shucking and sending to the Japanese. But what they were doing is after they were shucking it, they were putting it under nitrogen. So again, I sort of said, oh, come on, there's no way in hell that's going to be any good. And they said, you sit here, we're going to give you oysters that have just been shucked and oysters that have been under nitrogen. You tell us the difference. I couldn't. And then the light bulb went off, because if you take impeccably fresh product and put it under nitrogen immediately, first of all, it kills a lot of the pathogens that, because fish doesn't age well. But when you do it under nitrogen or cryogenically, the cell structure of the flesh doesn't change. It doesn't break down. It doesn't absorb water. It freezes in a matter of minutes. And so the quality of it is incredible.
So have you ever apologized to the ghost of Julia Child?
All the time. All right. Pay homage to her all the time, saying she was well advanced in her years in terms of knowledge.
That was Roger Berkowitz, longtime owner of Legal Seafoods and now the founder and CEO of Rogers Fish Co., an online marketplace and delivery service for fish and prepared food. We spoke with him late last month.